Welcome to the infected.
In his autumn for the winter comes man's last mad surge of youth.
Hello, dear friends of the infected. You've tuned in to the fourth episode of the second season of our podcast. I'm here again with Jeroen, and we're broadcasting from our infamous crypt. We've been looking through all of the relics we have laying around here in our crypt and made yet another nice selection of tunes and tales for you. As always, we're recording at midnight, and to make sure we all enter the night with some energy, let's start off with the band Rendezvous. These guys certainly don't mess around and offer high energy tracks only. This is Distance.
Wow, that's a raw burst of energy. Way to kick off the episode, man.
Yeah, right? Start off with some power.
Where did these guys come from? How did you run into them? What can you tell me about them? I've never heard of them.
Well, I ran into them by the guy that I took guitar lessons from 2 years ago. He played it. He said, if this is the music you like, this is an easy riff you can pick up on. And I thought, wow, never heard of this. So they're from France, and it's a five-piece band. They only started in 2012. Yeah, they do make energetic music, pumping post-punk with electronic aspects here and there. And as you've just heard, they sound quite angry as well. They sound like they're able to deliver some anger and energy. And that's what they do. They're quite young as well, these guys, and they have plenty of testosterone in their music, also in the interviews that they do. And I'm not sure, Jeroen, if you find out, but the younger or newer bands that we tried to get some backgrounds on, yeah, it's hard to find some interesting stuff because they all seem to display an aura of mystique in the interviews that they do, the desire to be unique, and they want to shed a bit of controversial stuff in the interviews that they do. And if you read all the answers, that yeah, they're basically trying really hard to be edgy.
Don't know if this is a weird sort of connection I'm making in my head. Synapses firing here, but it sounds to me like the sports stars of these days.
Yeah.
That even if you have a really young, successful football player or whatever,
yeah,
they start giving these answers which are exactly the same, all of them, right? All the time.
Yes. Yes, I think that's a great metaphor.
Maybe it's a pop star thing too. This just media training is just messing up this whole generation.
Yeah, I guess. Or with these bands, they're trying to be really deep or really far-fetched or really trying to, catch some attention. That doesn't matter. Maybe I'm becoming an old fart or a cynical old fart for that matter. But that doesn't really matter. But it does seem to be a trend if you read up on the interviews of these younger post-punk bands. Anyway, they're working passionately in the studio and have recently put out their first full-length album. That's called Superior State, and they released it in 2018. They're also touring a lot, and instead of shoegazing, the audience is violently dancing and jumping around. If you see the YouTube footage, they're trying really hard to bruise one another, and I think it's a kick-ass track.
So they're from France?
Yes, from Paris. Five guys.
Wow, they sounded so British somehow. I don't know. I definitely didn't hear it. The singer doesn't sound French at all.
No, he doesn't.
No, it sounded very British to me. But yeah, so young guys, very energetic. Obviously been studying the history of post-punk. But nice track.
Yeah, not much to say because they're a quite young band. Not that much background, but I thought we'd start off with some power. So here we go.
Well, I thought it was a worthy opener.
Thank you, sir.
So now that we've done a young band, we can go back and talk about ancient history again. No, just kidding. Actually, I want to talk about something that was all over Instagram this weekend, actually. So this is the Insta Outcast for this week. And it's called Tower of Strength 2020. I may be cheating here. So it's a new release, but actually it's still old farts behind this release.
But it sounds good. It's a tower of strength. After this first power track, we go along with some more power.
We go from strength to strength, man. So this is a song by Remission International. And indeed, Remission and Tower of Strength sounds very familiar. Tower of Strength obviously being the hit song by The Mission, which actually was released by them as a single two times in 1988 and then again in 1994. And it was a hit both times. But it's a long time ago, right? So why was it all over Instagram? Wayne Hussey, the lead singer of The Mission, and his friends have remade this classic Mission anthem because they wanted to do something positive in the COVID crisis that we're in the middle of.
Yeah.
Basically, this re-recorded version was released last Friday in support of workers dealing with COVID-19 globally. And as Wayne Hussey himself said, the song has apparently been adopted as an anthem by some of the NHS frontline workers, the National Health Service in England. And it got me thinking that I would like to contribute something to the greater cause at this unprecedented time. And the only thing I can really contribute is music. So he set this thing up. And if you're the singer of The Mission, you are in the fortunate position to have a lot of interesting friends. And you can ask them for help. In this recording, you can hear collaborators, including members of Susie and the Banshees. You can hear Gary Numan. You'll hear Depeche Mode members, The Smiths, Ultravox, Guns N' Roses, Trenta Müller, The Cult, Nine Inch Nails, Bauhaus, and The Cure members. All on this track.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. So this is something which was a lot of fun to make, I bet, as well. It's really a star-studded cast that all came together. So this song was recorded to support frontline workers in countries all over the world. So let's listen to it and let's hear what they did with this classic track, Tower of Strength, in the 2020 version by Remission. Me up So what did you think, Gove? Old people reliving a past which has faded away? Or new energy into an old song? Or
yeah, a little bit of both, maybe. So you get the recognition of an old and great single by The Mission. There are a lot more acts that worked on this, but the list was quite impressive that you mentioned. I couldn't pick out all of the singers or instrumentalists, but I like it because it's a good track still to this day. The cause is good. It's been a while since I've heard this one for the last time, Tower of Strength.
Yeah, definitely. I'd forgotten about it a bit. But yeah, it's an interesting track. It is something which is... I can totally see how it is a favorite with the fans and probably a good closer for concerts as well. And it's a very nice gesture of these guys to come together.
Yeah, I think that's why maybe they picked this one, even though it's a good song as it is. But the message that they wanted to convey, maybe the title lends itself more to convey the message. Tower of Strength, Corona.
Right, so it was already used as an anthem by the National Health Service people in the UK. So I guess that's how this came about.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear you say that you think it's important as well. Of course, this version is available to listen on all streaming platforms. But I'm going to ask you, Gove, as well as our listeners, to help this cause by buying at least a digital package of this song. The digital package is priced at only £2.99 or about €3.50. And that's not much, is it? I mean, you get five songs, five different versions of it. A really interesting Trenta Müller remix as well, which is taking it places this song has never been to before. So for the price of a coffee, you can receive all five versions. Okay, I commit. Personally, I will order the t-shirt, which also looks awesome. I'll put the link to the store in the show notes. And can we sign you up for a digital package at least, Gove?
Yeah, you can definitely sign me up. I mean, this is an amount that, yeah, I would otherwise piss away on a cup of coffee, just like you mentioned, or
yeah,
something else that I don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This doesn't even get you a coffee at the Starbucks, right? I mean, it's just not even enough money for that. So, yeah.
No, that's true.
So I'll put the link to the store in the show notes. And everybody that's listening, come on, help these legends to help those who help others in this crazy pandemic.
Yeah.
The frontline workers are the real tower of strength in the end.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Welcome to the Infected.
So let me bridge this one to Ministry. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that, but Ministry, they started in 1981 or something. And the song we're going to listen to right now is called Effigy.
Run up.
Wow. fun song, this. Definitely able to hear that this is a phase where they're still trying to find their voice. Very much Johnny Rotten inspired sort of style of singing at this point. He's saying that he's not angry a couple of times too often for me to believe him.
Yeah, he says he's not angry, but he sounds a bit angry. Yeah,
absolutely. I thought he was actually singing that he was a modern effigy, but it turns out that he's singing I'm not an effigy.
Yeah, that's what I picked up on. So do we know what effigy means, Jeroen?
I'm not really sure. I was trying to figure out what the message was or what the point of the song was. And it's an idol or an image or, something, a representation of something. But it's kind of weird. I guess we need some help from our native English-speaking listeners to explain to us what the hell this guy is on about.
Yeah, I get the same thing. So I picked up on it's like a effigy is a portrait or a one-dimensional image of something. But anyway, most people that hear the name Ministry don't think of music like this.
Yeah.
It's the first album that they did, and the album was called With Sympathy from 1983. And you hear some industrial or anger shining through, but it's very synth-poppy. And on release, the album received quite positive critical reviews, in fact. So music magazine Rolling Stone, the very famous one, they noted that any lack of originality in the synth-pop concept was hardly worth complaining about, because Ministry manages to do something many far more innovative bands neglect. They write catchy dance songs. Also, you can hear what L. Jurgensen would evolve into after this record. Even though he puts on this manufactured British accent, because it's an American guy, he's singing it charged with a certain anger and a certain passion, while mostly in synth-pop you hear very sugary and polished vocals, so that's kind of refreshing. L. Jorgensen's dissatisfaction over this record deal that he had with, I believe it was Arista, led him to, depart that label in early 1984. Jorgensen later disowned the album, maintaining that he was pressured by Arista management into producing the album in the then popular synth-pop style, which is in contrast to the harder industrial and heavy metal sounds that they would develop later on. He also compared his experience on this album to that of Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
However, I don't exactly believe this is true because, even though that Jurgensen said this, he has nothing to do with writing the tracks or choices that were made on this album. I think he wanted to become the next Joy Division, and when Arista wanted to continue the commercial sounding path, he went the other way. Also, to prove this point, some of the tracks on the album, With Sympathy, were released earlier in 1981 on a label Wax Tracks that they did some singles on. So that proves that Jurgensen was making this kind of British-inspired synth music way before he signed with the Arista label.
So he's full of shit, right? Because if they were pressuring him, they did it via a time machine, because they were already pressuring him even before he signed with them.
Yeah, he's full of shit. His face is full of shit, by the way, too. If you look at it, holy shit. He's lived 20 years of a life filled with drugs, rock and roll, and liquor, and he's full of tattoos and face piercings. But what people do in their spare time, it doesn't really matter to me, by the way. But he went the industrial way with really, really kick-ass great albums that they did in the 90s. My personal favorites are definitely Filth Pig and, of course, Psalm 69.
Jesus Built My Hot Rod. Love that one as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know Rammstein, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
If you listen to Rammstein and you then listen to Ministry, what they did in 1996 or mid-90s, you can clearly hear that Rammstein took a lot of the sound that the Ministry made.
The big picture.
I got a great movie tip for our listeners this week again, Jeroen. The Big Picture is back.
Welcome to Carno Burger. May I have your order, please?
Give me the Slop-O-Rama Belly Buster, no onions, a passion fruit slurpster, and a side of curly Q fries.
I'll have some barbecue beef chunks, some fried cheese balls, and Avion.
Diet Coke, extra large.
That'll be 666.
the research that I did on Ministry made me think for some reason about the movie The Doom Generation from 1995. It's a movie in which a protagonist, played by James Duval, quite a known actor from the 90s, continuously wears t-shirts from the band Ministry throughout this whole movie. The movie is about three teenagers coming of age, but not as cheerleaders or in a popular way. These are industrial goth-like teens, and they pick up a stranger who leads them on an increasingly surreal and murderous road trip. It all takes place in the dark side of the mid-90s pop culture. It certainly feels like the style that Oliver Stone uses for Natural Born Killers, remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was a bit earlier than this one, but it's basically about, because there's no middle ground. Everything is either eye-wateringly boring or a matter of life and death in this movie. It's very extreme. And the soundtrack especially features great bands like Coil, Front 242, Slowdive, Nine Inch Nails, Curve, FX Twin, you name it. So the movie is called The Doom Generation.
Yeah, I saw this popping up in the list of what we were going to do. I was looking whether I could find that soundtrack on Spotify. It's not actually out anywhere, probably mired up in some sort of legal morass or swamp of rights issues. But somebody took the trouble of recreating the album by taking all the individual songs and putting them in a public Spotify playlist. So in the end, we can still hear this. And I was watching that and I was looking at the acts. There's like 27, 28 songs on there. It's a really big playlist, a lot of interesting acts. And it's sort of a photograph of the music, alternative music scene at the time with really all the cherries picked and put on that playlist. So I'll put the link to that playlist in the show notes for you guys to check out, because it's really worthwhile.
How nice of you. Thanks, man.
And that concludes the movie section for today. So you have your homework cut out for you. I don't know whether it's very easy to find the movie.
Well, in a legal way, I will think our listeners would have to go to Amazon or some platform like that.
Look closely and you shall find. Infected Classic. Are we going to go back to 1982? Because today we're discussing Let Me Go by Heaven 17. And this really starts with the story of the British Electric Foundation. This was founded in 1979 based on the idea that it should be possible to make music with just synthesizers and a drum machine. Haha! Again, a couple of people that figured that out. And this was a band slash production company, the British Electric Foundation, formed by Human League members Martin Ware and Ian Craig Marsh. They produced several acts, but the best known BEF project was Heaven 17, with lead singer Glenn Gregory. Gregory had actually known them for many years, and he had been singing and playing bass guitar in bands with Ian since 73. But in early 81, after the original Human League broke up, Martin Ware asked him to join Heaven 17, a new band resulting from the Human League breakup. They were named after the band in... I'm looking at you, Gove.
Couldn't tell you.
Stanley Kubrick movie...
2001 Space Odyssey?
Almost.
Help me out.
No, Clockwork Orange.
Ooh, Clockwork Orange. Cool.
Yeah. So this novel by Anthony Burgess, which was turned into a movie by Stanley Kubrick, actually has a band called Heaven 17, so that's where they nicked the name from. Again, another band with a science fiction link. So they recorded five albums up from 81 until they're split in 1988, but... all this time, they never played live. And Martin Ware says about this, it was the start of MTV, and we figured that instead of touring, why don't we, in a very modern way, service all the world's markets simultaneously by just spending the money we would otherwise lose on touring on making good videos. Let Me Go by Heaven 17.
Once we were years ahead, but now those thoughts are dead. Let me tried but could not bring. The best of everything. Too breathless then to wonder. I died a thousand times.
Hey Jeroen, I know Heaven 17 mainly because of the song Temptation, that big hit that they had. This one, I've heard it, but I like it for many reasons. It wasn't really top of mind, but feels bubbly, catchy, sounds good. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting for a couple of reasons, both sentimental and actually it's historical in its own sense. Of course, you recognize the Lindrum, and I bet you also recognize the sound of the bass that's going on all through the song.
Yes, that's a Roland TB-303 we picked up on, yes.
Right, and this actually was pretty much the first track using the TB-303 for a bass line. And obviously the 303 later would be made immortal by Acid House,
yeah.
The real centerpiece of Acid House music. But this is the first hit song you will find where the 303 is used to this effect.
Yeah, nobody wanted to use this 303 to add on to this story because we're both synth fans and synth lovers, I guess. Nobody wanted to use it because it didn't really sound like a real bass. So bands and acts were struggling on what to do with it. But I believe this is the first one, like you just mentioned, but also maybe Shannon with Let the Music Play. But there's the only two that I can think of, yeah.
These British Electric Foundation guys, they were just pushing the envelope and trying to get stuff to sound as electronic as possible. So they were not trying to recreate a normal band or bass guitar sound, which is why they liked it, right? And obviously this is a link back to Trevor Horn and Yellow, some other of those artists at the same time who were pushing in the same direction. And funnily enough, of course, there is a link with Trevor Horn and his studio as well. Singer Glenn Gregory also frequently visited Horn's studio and worked with him and his team. And he's therefore featured on productions of ABC, Tina Turner, Grace Jones, and Propaganda.
Awesome. I was thinking back on the last week, but you mentioned that they were trying to program five synths and drum machines at the same time for quite some hours and then had to start all over again. Yeah, these guys certainly sound electronic as well, Heaven 17.
Yeah, yeah. So the song is about it's a story where the singer has really given his all in his relationship, but all has fallen apart and the relationship is over, no matter how hard he tries. The 12-inch is also very good. I will include a link to that in the show notes as well. But for a dance track, this theme is really quite melancholy, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And it's funny because you don't hear that many songs that sound this sort of funky with the little rhythm guitars in the back and still have this sort of melancholy theme. And I really like that sort of emotion in music generally. The contrast makes this song more interesting. But for me personally, this is also a melancholy song because it reminds me of the late 80s, the time that I used to spend. And we were together with a large group of friends a lot of the time, all in our early 20s. We went out several nights a week and we were really close. You know, young, creative, beautiful. We had our whole lives before us. And the mood of this song perfectly fits the melancholy feeling I get when I think back to those beautiful times. Once there was a day, we were together all the way, an endless path, unbroken. That's how it felt.
Cool. I like this personal touch, Jeroen, but it's melancholic, but it's also catchy and poppy. It's got a big replay value. Yeah, it's nice. Please allow me to stay within this these few years, because we're going to talk about the Chameleons right now, a band that you most likely have heard of.
Never.
All right. These guys, I believe they founded in 81, and this track that we're going to play later, it was released in 83. So just 1 year after the track we just listened to. The 1980s were an incredible era for music. It's a favorite era of the stuff we play here in our podcast. And it was also the decade where U2, The Cure, Echo and the Bunnymen released basically a flawless body of work throughout its entire 10 years. Also in this decade, hip-hop broke through, heavy metal aimed for world domination, and many other innovative bands in music were at their peak. Also, music television was doing well, and underground music scenes were thriving. So the 80s were great. Another innovative and highly soon-to-be influential band was to emerge from that same period. And I'm talking about the Chameleons, a four-piece band from Middleton. And Middleton is close to Manchester. Manchester being the birthplace of many, many, many great bands that we also feature here. And like all these many others, Mark Burgess started the Chameleons. Together with two friends he knew from school, they lost touch, went to a concert, met up again, and started the band. Shortly after, the band released their first single that was called In Shreds on CBS Records the following year, only to find themselves dropped after one single only over alleged artistic differences between themselves and the label. And that's not the first time we've heard that, Jeroen.
No, artistic differences, yeah.
It's it's a recurring theme, yes. So while not exactly seen as the end of the world at the time for a band who'd already become firm favorites with Radio 1 DJ John Peel, there wasn't exactly a shortage of interest in signing them up. Nevertheless, this bad luck with record labels seemed to trouble them throughout their short career as a creative force. Having been picked up by Static Records soon after, the band recorded their debut album, Script of the Bridge, over a six-week period. That's not that long. Static Records was affiliated with Richard Branson's Virgin Empire, and it wasn't long before the label's interference got in the way once more. After Static put out a reduced version of the record for the US market only, so they featured only 8 tracks out of the 12 tracks that they recorded, the band spent the next 2 years trying to get out of their contract, eventually doing so at the end of 1985.
Why bring out only 8 tracks when you already have 12 tracks recorded? What was the idea? Do you know anything about that? That's stupid, right?
I really couldn't tell, Jeroen, because if you listen to these tracks, there's not one bad one in there. So, yeah, I guess they were cutting themselves and all the fans and listeners short. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
I can imagine that you're pissed off when you're making a great collection of 12 songs and then somebody just carves out 4.
Yeah. So this is the second time that they were trying to get out of a record contract, record deal. And after the long-awaited second album finally came out, unfortunately, by that time, they'd missed the commercial money train. Because all other bands, they made good money off of their albums, but due to the issues that the Chameleons had with all these labels, yeah, they missed out. It was a bit too late. But that hasn't stopped them to put out great music. The Chameleons, with their dual-layered guitar sound and their Mark Burgess vocals, really cut through. Still remains fresh to this day.
So let's hear it.
We're going to listen to the Chameleons with Don't Fall.
In his autumn for the winter comes man's last mad surge of youth.
What on earth are you talking about?
Alright, so let's talk about the Chameleons. Really, I'd never heard of them. And it's quite an atypical sound. They sound like somehow there's rockabilly in there, or psychobilly maybe in the back in influences also. It made me think that I really need to talk about the Cramps sometime soon also because of the goth references. But when was this made?
83. Well, they may have recorded it in 82, but it was released in 83.
Yeah, okay. So this doesn't sound like a record from 83 somehow, but it's much more original than many of the things that were released that year. So I really like it. And then in this song, something very specific happens when the song breaks down at about 2 minutes, 45 seconds. They sort of break it down all the way, and then they sort of build it back up again. And there's this sound of, I don't know, a tambourine, which is just panning and going from left to right, but also sounds very electronical. It's full of, you know, these little nice production tricks and stuff, and I love it.
Likewise, Roen, And I saw them in 2013 in Amsterdam during the Grauzone Festival. That was fucking great. The band was doing really well live. The sound of Mark, his voice was less than stable, to put it mildly. But didn't take away from, seeing them live. It was cool. If you like to hear more, I would suggest to check out the first three albums that they did. It's hard to pick a favorite. All great.
Infect me. All right, cool. So we've been talking about the 80s a lot, and I think it's time we take it back at least until the last decade. Let's talk about the next track. It's called Pain, and it is not only an EBM hit. It has become a staple of techno after parties in Rotterdam, Paris, London and beyond. I would have loved to do an interview with the people from Boy Harsher, but we've got some nice quotes from an interview they did recently with Metal Magazine. But first, let me introduce Boy Harsher, the band. Two people behind Boy Harsher are Gus Miller and Jay Matthew. They met in Georgia about 8 years ago, and Jay was writing and directing some really cool video projects. Gus was writing music scores for movies, and he was really into Jay, so he offered her to write the music for some of her videos, and slowly they got into a relationship and turned into a band. Now, this relationship, their opinions differ on how wholesome it was or how exactly it worked, but the band evolved and their style is really interesting. It sort of oscillates between dark wave, synth pop, minimal, EBM, goth trance, etc. And they list Yellow and Suicide as influences, as well as Severed Heads and This Mortal Coil. When I was doing some research on the band, I found that they have put their Road Tunes playlist on Spotify of their 2019 tour. So it's interesting that you can actually listen to what they were listening to while they were on the road recently, just before Corona. I'll put the link to that playlist also in the show notes. But let's play the song. This is the track Pain by Boy Harsher. We'll be right back.
is a great one. I've heard them in one or two of my my Spotify playlists, and forgot about it actually. But nice to hear again. It's like EBM powerful stuff. So this is recent-ish.
It's 2014. It's actually from their debut album.
Oh yeah, yeah, great.
The history of the song I thought was interesting as well. Gus, who does most of the synth programming and the scoring, told in the interview that this track actually came together really fast and accidental. He had the hook in his head, Pain braced the rhythm, and then he went from there. And Jay, the singer, added that the song came from a very specific moment. Hmm. The emotion behind the song Pain is the cyclical feedback loop of our abject heartache. We were in a really tough spot. We hated one another, but we would always wind up sabotaging our space by sleeping together. We were really cruel about the whole thing, and it was just painful. And as any crisis, it felt so close up and extreme that it just was a fucking mess.
Hmm. So we got a bit of a erotic, romantic story that involves some pain and intenseness.
Yes, and you can hear that, I don't know, somehow through the music, that is not just a poppy song about pain, but there's real emotion behind it, even though because of the production, it sounds very clinical, and that's what I think is an interesting tension in this song, the tension between those two elements.
Yeah, definitely, and it's very, very danceable. It may be at an, let's say, 4 or 5 o'clock at night, but it's very moody and danceable at the same time. It's a nice combination. You don't find it that much.
No, it's great after-party material. And they also, in this interview, I picked up a question which I thought I'd share with you, because I know you're a movie nut, and since they both come from a cinematic background, they were asked the question that if Boy Harsher were a movie, what would it be? And their answers were, Jay said, "I like to think of it as a perverse neo-noir existing in some hot swamp city, like Body Heat by Lawrence Kasdan, but much weirder." And Lynch's Lost Highway might be a cliche, but it's a confusing, erotic masterpiece. I hope that Boy Harsher could be like that someday. Infect me. So that concludes our episode for tonight. I again want to thank you for listening. First of all, Hugo, for listening and bearing with me while I keep blathering on about stuff that was really great in the 80s.
I think we both did, but Jeroen, just there were great tracks, six powerhouses, if you ask me.
I could be modest, but fuck that. I also loved what we played tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we talk. It's a podcast. It's not like a remix show. It's not a continuously mixed one. We discuss the music we love, and we hope you do too.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of fucking fanboys. Let's face it. I mean,
yep.
And you know what's better than being able to talk about the music that you play and that you love, and you know, find out some new stuff about it, maybe.
Exactly. Infect
me. So, as always, we do hope you like this episode. And we would love it if you would subscribe to our show so that you never miss another one. You can do this at our awesome site, theinfected.nl. You will find all the links that you just have to click once and immediately you'll be subscribed, whether on Spotify or Google or Apple Podcasts, whatever you like, whatever you want. And while you're there and you're looking around on our website, we have some great Spotify playlists there in the spirit of The Infected. Lots of music inspiration for you, and a fine collection of all the songs we've played on the show. And also, we have the show notes of each episode with all the stories and the links that we promised you during the show. We regularly publish interviews with artists from the scene, and you'll also find some mixed sets of music there. And if you enjoy this show, please help us out. A like on any social media platform is nice, but a nice rating on Spotify, Google, or iTunes is really, really very helpful. So, that's all for now. Thanks for listening. It is, again, a nice clear night out, and I think we have a job well done to celebrate. So allow me, Gove, to pour you a glass of this warm red liquid.
Ooh, I'm thirsty. Is it blood or is it red wine? I can't see it on the webcam. Okay. Thank you, my friend.
Cheers, and good night to you, our listeners.
Extreme reaction to UV exposure. Symptoms and tissue samples confirm subject is infected with KV. Vaccine test. GA series serum 391, compound 6. Commencing human trials. Respiration slowing. Pulse 190. Core temperature 105, 104, and decreasing. We may have something here.